You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
And thanks for joining me for another Blunt Business there on CannabisRadio.com. We're not going to waste much time because there's so much to cover today on this program where I get to go ahead and follow back up on the situation around I-71. And once again, I'm joined by Terrence White, CEO and founder of the cannabis lifestyle brand Monco and the chairman of the I-71 committee. We're going to talk to him very shortly about the various issues when it comes to the Harris Rider. He was able to go and now obtain a medical cannabis license. Congratulations to that. And so much more. We'll go and do that in just a moment. But first, Blunt Business is powered by the Buzz CRM. We're going to make this quick. Look, 500 marketing tools under your disposal. One website, one login. Cut the BS, right? Let's just go and just give people right to the fact of we will have webinars very soon. So you can go ahead and get under the hood and see what it's like for yourself. But you want something that's intuitive, great workflows, great workarounds, integrated with whatever software service platforms that you have. The Buzz CRM does it for you. All your marketing and lead generation needs, all under one hood. That's it. TheBuzzCRM.com. Do I have to say any more? I'm not going to give you a whole long spiel today. We're going to just go and keep it short. TheBuzzCRM.com today. Just go there, buy it. You'll be happy you did. I use it too. So trust me on this. If you trust this program, you'll trust me on this. Okay. So once again, my guest is a dynamic entrepreneur at the forefront of DC's evolving cannabis landscape. CEO and founder of Monco, a burgeoning cannabis lifestyle brand. We went through all this before. He's chairman of the I-71 committee, has a pivotal role where he actively advocates for policy reforms in a more robust cannabis market in the District of Columbia. He's a leading voice in the conversation surrounding cannabis legalization, social equity, and its potential to bolster DC's economy. Now the owner of a medical cannabis license is our last talk in October 2023. Welcome back, Terrence.
Hey, how's it going, George?
Doing good. I'm so glad we get back to this once again, because it was so much that you opened my eyes to that I did not realize what was going on with the whole situation. We're going to go ahead and refresh people real quickly on the Initiative 71. In 2014, a ballot initiative passed in Washington, D.C., legalizing the possession and home cultivation of small amounts of cannabis for adults over 21. However, due to the Harris Rider, a congressional rider, the initiative prohibits the establishment of a regulated system for the sale of cannabis. As a result, DC operates under a unique gifting model where cannabis can be exchanged as a gift alongside the purchase of another item or service, creating a complex and often confusing gray market. This federal restriction has prevented DC from fully capitalizing on the potential tax revenue and economic benefits of a fully regulated adult-use cannabis market as seen in neighboring states like Maryland, which has gone legal since we last talked. So in the landscape right now, number one, talk to me real quick, Terrence, about we talked before you were looking to acquire and secure a medical cannabis license. You have done that now. And Maryland has been greenlit for adult use in the nearby Maryland. Tell me about the changes that have happened since we last talked in that respect for yourself and the environment around you.
Well, thanks for having me again. Sure. First of all, I-71 is no longer in DC as of March 31st, 2025. Every dispensary that did not have got a license, whether it was conditional, social equity, or a street license, they shut them down, pretty much enforced. And so now where we are is that we have, I think it's 50 to 60 licenses here in the district. And moving forward, Everyone is we're in a medical market using DC home grown products,
right?
Which is a big difference than what we were getting before. So, and you know, since 2023, Maryland was medical, then they became adult use. It has really put a hamper and really made us as entrepreneurs here in the district sharpen our tools, our pencil, finding more tools to put in the toolbox, you name it. Because we used to have that customer from Maryland come to DC. They no longer come to DC. And with this administration, meaning the Trump administration and all the fear, you know, about 75% of the DMV has some type of government affiliation in terms of employment, contracting, you know, your clearances, you name it. So it's really, really put a damper on the industry here in terms of DC becoming medical. For the last 2 weeks, I have been trying to get, you know, going into this, I had about 22 to 23,000 customers trying to convert them over, and it's been extremely hard. The district has not done a great job of promoting these businesses, meaning the new medical dispensary. So it's been an uphill battle thus far.
I want to ask one question about this because of the existing customer base you have right now. From what the Trump administration has done, obviously they've been going through the DOGE initiative, that there have been a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of jobs that were being either turned around or just being cut. And I've read a lot, I've seen a lot on social media about the fact that there were so many real estate properties now available in and around D.C.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
That have been changed. So I imagine in the D.C. area, the customer base has probably gone through quite a bit of a shift, because some of the people that might have been under government employment that would have been working or in operating within the vicinity of DC, that might have changed quite a bit. Have you seen a real change in the makeup of the people coming in?
Yeah, we've seen a change, but we've also seen a change with the attitude of people, just the spending dollars. People are more reserved now to that disposable cash flow that they were using, especially younger people, because, you know, they got laid off. They were one of the first to get laid off with this. And so when you talk about the disposable income, for, you know, that Gen Z, you know, that, you know, they paid their rent. They were IT. They were, you know, $100,000 to $125,000 a year jobs, plus, now the attitude is, let me be careful, because we don't know what's next. And on top of that, Congress is withholding $1 billion of DC's money that was appropriated for DC's own money.
Right.
Well, man, we're talking about DC government employees getting furloughed. So it's becoming a shit show, to say the least, because you have an administration that's trying to strong arm DC, and then you have DC who had already appropriated these funds for different agencies. Now they're talking about job cuts.
Well, let's go and talk about that part, because now, as you mentioned, and there's a Cannabis Business Times article that you penned talking about the issues right now with the Harris Writer, and want to make sure to just give the article title a good run. Congress's Harris Writer stars DC economy, cannabis could save it. And in that article, you make the point that with that $1 billion deficit in 2028, that DC could be looking to cannabis, should be looking to cannabis as a key to saving the city's budget. And can you give me any kind of breakdown on how you envision the revenue generation from a fully legal adult use market and tax rates, regulatory structures? Have you, I know you were talking about the DC Chamber of Commerce that you connected with. I don't know if the mayor, Amir Bowser, has been involved in this and all, but have you had conversations with them at all about what this could do?
I've talked to, I'm part of two chambers here, the DC Chamber and the Greater Washington Chamber. The way the Greater Washington Chamber and I had a call about 3 weeks ago to speak with the deputy mayor of finance and appropriations. And what we try to do is come up with 4 points, how a adult use could help DC revenue tremendously. First of all is, If we were adult use, we basically go back to our 71-202, just a recreational market. Although we do have medical products, which we would have also, people wouldn't have to show a medical card, which DC sees about 22 to 23 million people a year from a tourist standpoint. So now they have to come in, register, do a 3-day medical card, pay $10, and then, you know, go through that whole process. If it was a free will or free flow, now you're talking about taking, let's say we got roughly 20 million people. Let's take half of those people and say they're cannabis users. Now we take 800,000 people here in the city. That's roughly, we got about 11.4 million people that we have access to sell cannabis to. Now, think about this. Maryland did $1.1 billion last year in cannabis sales. They have 6 million people to actually live in the state of Maryland. They had 12 million people to visit Maryland last year. That's what the numbers are. So already, if we had a recreational or adult use market, we would have the ability to have $1 billion in cannabis sales every year.
Yeah.
That revenue, we're in an 8.8 square mile city. That's what DC is, 8.8 square miles. So now you want to talk about revenue for small businesses, resources, a war to fight against big businesses, that war chest. You want to talk about disproportionate communities, people of color. We cannot. The mayor is no longer talking about DEI or social equity, but in cannabis, we have to continue to talk about that. But let's talk about affordable housing. All these things that there is a deficit or some type of budget restraint around, the cannabis market can help fuel those markets. Because here's the thing. Our mayor is not pro-cannabis. And right. The reason that Maryland is driving, you know, we talked earlier about, you know, some things that I wrote about my article. And one of the things that I didn't say in the article, which, you know, because you only get so many words in these articles, is that Wes Moore is probably the most pro-cannabis governor outside of what's going on in California, Newsom.
Right.
Wes Moore has done more in 3 years than most governors, most legislators have done in 20 years. And when you have someone, a leader at the top, pushing an agenda to fuel, and also he sees that there is a revenue stream, but he also sees that there is a policy and political need, but also a social, which is most important, need that can be met through cannabis. That's what you look for in a leader, someone that can pivot. I'm in DC with a mayor who she can give 2 cents about what cannabis is, and her administration has shown that. And I fight every day against it. I like what Mirabaz have done, you know, in some guns, but when it pertains to cannabis, the industry I'm in, I've been quite disappointed because of the narrow-minded of the administration. And when you have these type things and people that don't see a bigger picture. And
at least there's going to be another year and a half before we can start looking at elections. And then it's less than 2 years before she leaves office. And that with the end of her term,
potentially leaves office, she's going to run again.
Right.
So
the thing is, and I feel like this is the part where, and this is where I think some elected officials in these cities, where certain things that are more performative than more active are more important in the optics of what they're trying to go and do, which obviously that, you know, it really put a more of a spotlight on her to more recognition to her. But again, you put in the article and you make the point, housing goals weaken, equity stalls, this $1 billion shortfall, where there's no talking back and trying to go and work with the federal government to try to go and make good and maybe kind of, you know, mend the fence here of what's been going on. Then there's the 175-acre RFK redevelopment, the commander's potential return, all these different things that need public investment. And with cannabis, I was trying to look in the article. Did you make any kind of estimate, or is there any estimate that's been put out there if DC were to go and the Harris Rider, regardless of the Harris Rider, whatever it is, if DC were able to go adult use compared to Maryland, what would be a reasonable, how much could cannabis recover for the DC area in terms of that $1 billion shortfall? Could it cover the whole thing, or do you think could it get a good chunk of it?
It would be a good chunk of it. It wouldn't cover the whole thing, but you got to remember that $1 billion shortfall form is two things. Number one, they're withholding $1 billion.
Right.
And the other thing, there's another $1 billion that the city's going to lose in the next 3 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. So cannabis, so you're talking about $2 billion. So in terms of, will cannabis fill that whole void? Absolutely not. Will it fill some of it? Absolutely. But here's the thing. The mayor is scared of a couple of things. Number one, the Trump administration, as well as Congress, has dangled the fact that they want to pull home rule. And it's, for those who don't know what home rule is, it basically gives the president and Congress the ability to take back any legislation power from the District of Columbia, meaning that all decisions that made in the district would be passed on the cap up on the hill up the street.
Yeah.
From what I sit here right now, which is so fearful for a lot of not only leaders here from the politicians, but also the residents, because DC is full on limit. We've been taxation without representation. That's on our license tag, right? So now you're actually telling someone who pays the fourth highest taxes in the nation that, hey, people that don't live here, that live somewhere else, they're going to come and take over and say, hey, what you can and can't do. That's one point. The second point is that with the Harris Rider, DC had the ability in 2018 to buy into create its own cannabis budget. The mayor decided not to.
Okay. I'll never understand why it's gone, because that's the part. It's like it's part where some of these policymakers are being brought in. And again, there's been always an issue where I guess the reputation for DC and just, I think somebody that comes in here that can actually make rules and make a change. I just don't know what the machine is there and why this continues to be right now. But even if there is all this issue right now where the short downfall, like where is a negotiation? Like the mayor, if she would have either or her team, they're not that far together to go over to the White House and go negotiate and do something to say, okay, we'll do something here to go make concessions so we can get that money back.
George, here's the thing. Congress left doing on brink.
Yeah.
And said, we'll talk about your $1 billion when we get back.
Oh, the Easter holiday, by the way, was recording this, but yes.
Right. So, but then you got to remember, you're in Georgia. I mean, in Florida.
Yes.
President Trump is not a cannabis guy.
Well, he says he's a medical marijuana advocate because he did support the amendment here in Florida, which did not pass, by the way.
But here's the thing, though. In November of 2024, the Biden administration said that they had agreed to pass rescheduling cannabis. We had the election. He fired the administrator. He's pretty much threatened the law firm that was behind rescheduling cannabis, Pope, and I can't remember the last name. So what are we talking about? Because if he was in so much of a hurry to do something, his DEA, the director of the DEA, is not a cannabis guy. And so we're in a situation right now where we're fighting two things here in the district. Well, three things. Number one, we're fighting a administration that is not pro-cannabis, even though they say they are. We're going into 90 some days. Cannabis has not really been mentioned. Number two is I'm fighting a mayor that has never really been behind cannabis. And number three is, which is the biggest thing because I'm in a space every day, we have people here in the District of Columbia who don't want to get a medical card because they're scared to get a medical card, which also creates a downfall in business.
Well, and so, right. But the thing is, I'm just saying for the fact that if there's something to be said about trying to go back and just approach, because that's just too much money to go ahead and just say, okay, we're going to hold up in our political divide. There's got to be just some kind of coming to the table, I guess. And the thing, but if this is the EA, the one thing I will say is that I don't know if it's so much the administration is coming in, because from everything I've read, the administrative law judge was still the one that's in place that's overseeing the process, but he's put a moratorium on it. He's held this back from moving forward. And I don't know. Perkins Coie was the law firm you were mentioning. That was the one that was taking out the whole issue with the rescheduling. But there's been a lot of issues within John Mulrooney, this administrative law judge who's overseeing the process. This was but under the demand of the HHS under Biden. It's been, I don't think I've seen any intervention in this so far for the administration. Obviously, we know the DEA, and we haven't even gotten so any clarity as to what their feelings are about this right now and intervening in the process. All we know is that this rescheduling has been put on hold for months. We don't know when it's going to start back up again. And that's a problem we have right now, that we have no clarity about that whatsoever. Well, that's another issue in itself that would carry a lot of things for financial, for research. I was talking to somebody right now, a lawyer, about the fact that it might open up, you know, for employees to go ahead and employ and not have the issues. And then the drug testing issues of the would fall into the Americans with Disabilities Act, you could argue. Those kind of things would be great if rescheduling came into play. But nothing's happened there at all. We're just, I mean, whoever's sitting back there right now, that administrative law judge holds the key, and he has decided to move nowhere with us right now for whatever reason. And there's been a lot of allegations about some of the issues about who was able to go and testify, who's been allowed to be a part of this procedures. There's a lot of shady stuff going on right there as it is. We just got to figure out when that's going to happen. But it comes down to back to D.C., what can be done about it? And I want to go to commercial break, Terrence, if we can. And I want to come back to you and follow back up and talk more about what can be done. Because specifically, I want to ask about where was the Harris rider now at this moment is gone. So like the distinction and the process, the fact that you looked at it ahead of time, other dispensaries looked at it proactively and said, well, we better do something about it. So you got the medical cannabis. And now that's where D.C. is at this moment after March 31st. We're back with more questions with Terrence White, CEO and founder of Monco and chairman of the I-71 committee here on Bullet Business. We'll be back after a short break. Welcome back to Bullet Business. I'm here with Terrence White, CEO and founder of cannabis lifestyle brand Monco, chairman of the I-71 committee. And Terrence, I know we had to go to break, but I want to give you a chance to go and respond back to all the issues when it comes to the DEA rescheduling. I don't know if I'm ready to go ahead and say that the Trump administration is blocking or intervening in the process. It doesn't look like they have done anything. And the reports right now say that there's an administrative law judge that's kind of just holding things up right now without any timetable to restart proceedings.
Well, you know, two reports out there. There's their report, and then there's also the report that the administration has said, stop the proceedings until we say we're ready to move forward. And so, you know, there's some mixed things out there. But let me say this as far as what D.C. can do, and that's what we, before break, that's what we talked about. Well, until D.C. makes up its mind that as a collective group, meaning the mayor and council, that they're going to fight for this issue, then we're going to continue to be in a pickle.
Yeah.
As it pertains as the Harris rider, every time that the rider is taken out, it's put back in. The president has the ability to put it in his budget. Biden didn't do it. Trump's probably not going to do it. And so we're still going to be in the same thing fighting, you know, in this medical space. Anything that does with crime in the city, it seems like cannabis is the caterpillar of why, you know, people are smoking cannabis. They're doing this, they're doing that. And it's become the linchpin of every crime here in the city, not thinking that, hey, you know, it's not cannabis, it's people. People are behind crimes, not the drug. You know, it's so many fights on so many different levels. And if I could say this, as someone who's been trying to get the Harris rider removed, as someone who's talked to federal lobbyists, as well as local lobbyists about how do we do things differently? How do we monetize this cannabis industry? But most effectively, how do we educate, people on cannabis and letting them understand that it's those who abuse cannabis, that, you know, just like any other drug that we cannot control, but we can also try to educate and try to get help for. We have a lot of mental illness in this country, and people revert back to things that make them feel good for the moment. And sometimes cannabis is the branch that people go to. And when they go to that branch and then they do something stupid, then when they get arrested, oh, the guy was smoking or this person was doing that. And it leads back to a negative stigma, which I've been trying to overcome since I've been in the business. With that all being said, we can only do what we can do, and that's continue to fight, educate, and try to convince people to take that stitch and stigma off of cannabis. You know, and unfortunately, we're in a facet political climate right now. And that hurts even more because when you have people who are closed minded and have closed ears, it leads to the small business people like myself who get the brunt. We the one that have to take the fall, but we're also the ones that have to fight, because if we don't fight, we're going to lose. And that's the bottom line. And so I've made it my business. We'll continue to make it my business to fight for this community, not only from a business perspective, but from a social equity perspective, from a returned citizen, which I am. And that's the bottom line, because every voice needs to be heard, and you keep knocking at the door and somebody eventually is going to let you in. And that's what I believe. You know, it's not easy at all. Some days I want to get out of this. But when I look at my stack of bills, and I told my staff this yesterday, is that you guys are free agents. These bills going to have to get paid, and I'm committed to doing this because my money is tied up in this, not only from that standpoint, but I'm tied up into this. I've become made this my one of my purposes in life, to fight for people of color, to fight for the industry, and making sure that at some point that we as a country, which we have about 40 states right now that have legalized cannabis, that every state will legalized cannabis, that it will be decriminalized, that we can allow people who are sitting in prison right now for petty cannabis charges or cannabis charges at all that are nonviolent, that they get the opportunity to go home to their families. And that's what it's about.
Yeah. The other thing too is that, and I didn't make mention of this as well, but this is another story from Cannabis Business Times. They talk about the fact that in the area we're talking about, when it came to a Ministry of Law judges, that the Department of Justice has announced that they will no longer defend statutory protections that currently shield administrative law judges from removal. So a lot of things could happen on the federal level, but unfortunately, it still comes down to the fact that DC has to, they're going to follow what the federal level is, because this Harris rider has been in place. Now this out once again, is there any talk that it would be brought back again like before? Has that been talked about at all?
No, it hasn't been talked about at all. And you got to think about it right now. You got 60 senators. If the Safer Bank Act or rescheduling would come to the floor, you got 60 senators that would vote on it. If you go to the House, Mike Johnson's not going to vote on this. He's not even going to bring the vote to the floor. And that's the sad part, because you have states, like I said, 40 states that have said cannabis from a medical standpoint was legal. We're still talking 2025 trying to get banking in cannabis. But when you have lobbyists outside of defense and healthcare, your alcohol or tobacco are your biggest lobbyists in on the Hill. And they're trying to negate cannabis at every turn. If you think about where this country is going to, your Gen Z community, they rather smoke than drink. And then on top of that, they're not vaping or smoking cigarettes, they're smoking a joint. So you have a lot of people who are pushing back, and they're spending a lot of money to push back. And with that being said, it negates everything that we're trying to do as a cannabis community to pass these laws, which are necessarily, especially for the district, because we rely on the federal government. We do not have representation. And unfortunately, that hurts. That hurts big. We do not control our purse strings. And although we have the money, you know, the average income in the district, I think, is 125K, you know, household wise. And, you know, that's one of the highest in the country. So if you look at the amount of tax dollars that we can generate from cannabis with tourism, and also, you know, thinking about, you know, a place like Massachusetts where, you know, you could advertise within stadiums and things like that. There's the outcome is tremendous. But, you know, until we get a pro cannabis council and mayor to actually say, hey, we stand with you guys. We stand with your small business, because we don't have MSOs in DC. There's no multi-state operator here. Everyone's mom and pop. And as someone who's going vertical, I have a license, my Pleasant Hill Wellness, and Swiss One Global, which owns the, we're going vertical. But the thing is, you know, we have to play our cards right. And we got to hold them close to the chest, because we just don't know. The regulations change daily. People's minds changing. And again, we don't have full consent from the city that, hey, they support this industry. And that's the saddest and biggest part.
It's a shame, because we've seen so many different areas right now that there are bills that have been put out bipartisan. I mean, I was talking about the States Act when it comes to Elizabeth Warren and Cory Gardner, where I've seen Senator Schumer, Senator Booker coming together on their own bill. And there's been other bills to put out there. And I mean, I even see some areas where there are some things around to be done in terms of House Republicans trying to file bills to prevent 280E tax relief. Or it's like, I don't understand. The one thing is that we need Congress to start working efficiently. And now that you're seeing more where there's the supermajority right now, or the majority right now, House, Senate, presidency, you would think Congress could start moving along and just see where we get along and see if we actually get to a point where we can actually see cannabis be brought up as a bill. Like, if we can start seeing bills being put up front now that they get past whatever the budget resolution is, once they get past that, what are the bills going to be finally start moving along to make Congress start moving forward? And let's just see if the bill gets up to a vote, because that's the part that's been the biggest problem of Congress, is that I don't know so much about the presidency as it is Congress. Just the other go ahead and say, okay, let's start putting bills up for vote. Let's start actually moving the system along as it should.
And just like I said a few minutes to you ago, is that, you know, I read something the other day. They polled You know, they talk about the 100 senators, over 60 support 280E banking laws. But the problem is in the House, Mike Johnson is not going to bring this to the floor.
Yeah.
He said it very loud and clear. It's not something that, you know, he cares about, and he's not going to bring it to the floor. And when you have closed-minded people, because Louisiana will probably be the last state, Louisiana, South Carolina will probably be the last, and South Carolina, maybe even North Carolina, and unfortunately, but when you have these, you know, you already have Alabama and Mississippi are already legal states. You have these closed-minded Bible Belt politicians. They're closed-minded to everything but their own greed. And that's sad because the research that can be done with medical cannabis, especially in poor parishes like Louisiana, could help a lot. Tax dollars in poor areas where we still seeing people enslaved here in 2025. In certain areas that they're still reporting that people work on plantations. And so, you know, we're talking about allowing people not to have the right to actually smoke something or be, utilize something that can help the body that's been before Christ. It's sad. It's really sad.
We're going to go back to commercial break. When we come back, I want to go ahead and ask about just some of the comments and just some of the changes that happened since we last talked in October 2023 about what has happened in preparation for the Harris Rider to go away and where I-71 now stands today, the certain gifting model, and where all these different dispensaries are right now at the moment. We'll talk about that more with Terrence White, CEO and founder of Monco and chairman of the I-71 committee. And once again, just to go make sure everybody knows about it, we haven't talked about Monco yet, but you should go ahead and take a look for yourself about the great brand that Monco is. Monco.co, M-O-N-K-O.co, M-O-N-K-O.co. Take a look at that. And all the variety of products available in here for the D.C. area as we go to commercial break. I'm back with final questions with Terrence White, CEO and founder of Monco and chairman of the I-71 committee. So, Terrence, we talked October 2023, so about a year and a half ago, we talked about the issues when it came to this, and, you know, a lot of has changed right now. We mentioned now that as of March 31st, that Harris Rider is no longer active. A lot of dispensaries are trying to do what you've already done ahead of time. You were talking about securing a medical cannabis license. Now, there's over 270 medical cannabis dispensary licenses potentially on the horizon for D.C., so now everybody had to go and get themselves. If they hadn't done so, now they got to be medical cannabis to stay in this market and be able to move along. Does this now create a saturated market, or is this going to be a foundation that you see an adult use industry eventually coming across that DC will be able to go and vote on or whatever that might be? What adjustments might be necessary to ensure this transition now that it's all in place and the Harris Rider is no longer active?
Well, you can remember the Harris Rider is still active. But so now you go from 200 and some dispensaries down to 60. 60 is what the number is right now. It should loosen up the market. But what you don't have is the same number of clients or patients or customers. That base is going to dwindle. They're going to go to Maryland because it's recreational. And as we talked about earlier, as I talked about, is because people don't want to get a medical card. That's what it comes down to. You know, if you're talking about a government worker or someone going in a database, they're just not trying to do it. And then on top of that, you know, there's conflicting stories. Can I have a carrying permit versus, you know, and so there's some things there from a protection standpoint. And so when people start talking about their Second Amendment rights, cannabis or their Second Amendment rights. They're gonna lean towards their Second Amendment rights and they'll buy cannabis where they can show their ID. So that's that. Going forward, the district does, as I mentioned earlier, we have the ability to be a thriving market. I think these 60 stores could set a foundation, but what I fear is in the next year, 60 will be 30. And the reason I say that is a lot of people, basically like myself, we're having to, basically start our business over again. Going from, you know, 20 some thousand customers to converting them and building new products, building confidence, brand identity, brand loyalty, marketing, and understanding that, hey, we support these six or seven cultivators and manufacturers in a city because that's what it pretty much is. Understanding that their product is not a stizzy or not a wow or whatever the case may be, and introducing these people to, when you have major brand products and now you go to local white label products, it takes time. It takes time for people to buy into it. And, you know, I've been trying to work closely with these cultivators and manufacturers to get their brands out, get them affiliated with their audience and their customer base. And it's just going to take time. And it's going to take money. Marketing is not cheap. And so that's the commitment that, you know, we're making. I wish the city was making the same commitment. I wish the city would say, hey, in lieu of us enforcing on the I-71 stores, and as of March 31st, we have X number of stores. They're safe products. We support them just to get some voter confidence or customer confidence behind just the whole program itself. Unfortunately, we haven't had that. And so we have to, you know, go out on our own branch and our own limb, or, you know, and fight this battle, as a solo soldier, against our army. And so, you know, it takes the resources. And I do something called Parents Corner every week. Pretty much is, I talk about, you know, what it takes to be a small business person or entrepreneur. And we talk about, last week was about your resources, what you have in your war chest and what you don't have. And unfortunately, our war chest is only so big, because when you fight against a city and then you're fighting against MSOs and you're less than 30 minutes away from your nearest state that's adult use, is within within a 30-minute radius of you, and people can go there. It's a whole different type of fight.
So now, one of the things that I'm going to say is that I thought about you when I saw Maryland was going adult use, and thinking about that whole corridor right there. And since then, they've collected roughly, what, in 2024, $73 million in cannabis tax revenue. They're now going to go ahead and increase the sales tax coming up. Lawmakers approved that this week as we're recording, from 9% to 12% right now, effective fiscal year 2026 and every year thereafter. So they're rolling in the dough, and is gotten the shaft as a result of this, and it's just gotten to another level. So, I mean, part of it is, does something happen with DC? You know, what did you go from here? Is there any kind of a thing where Maryland, you know, will they get the benefit now? If there's a way that DC residents or the people in the district will be able to go to Maryland and be going collect and get adult use, is there something down the line where there would be some kind of change to that? Where, since DC's not, you know, regulated like a state, could there be something where residents would just say, well, we're just going to go to Maryland for it, and the DC stores, it's just too much of a tangle to go?
Yeah, well, that's what we're trying to fight. Yep. But again, you know, you're telling a person again that HIPAA was supposed to protect, you know, as having a medical card, but with DOGE, people are fearful, and they don't know that, you know, I'm getting a medical card and someone's going to go and take, you know, and use it against me, and it's supposed to be prohibited, and all of a sudden you're fired. People are scared of that because, you know, their job is their security. And, unfortunately, you know, what you just mentioned of people, about people going to Maryland is a real life scenario.
Yeah.
And let me say this, until, again, I'm going to reiterate this 100 times, until our chairman, our mayor, our chairman of the council, our mayor, our council members all buy into, we're going to protect this market. We want this market. It can be beneficial. We're going to continue to have these conversations. And what I ask that taxpayers and voters, when they go to the ballot box coming up soon, that they vote, if those who are not in lieu of cannabis and want to see this cannabis market thrive, I ask that you vote for someone that does. And I ask that you take this very seriously, because it's another part of them taking your rights away. You have the right to do this. And here's the sad part about this is that we put so many restraints on cannabis where people thinking, oh, it's this and it's that. Well, if 40 states have said that cannabis is medical legal, I think 28, we're almost at 30 states that said they're recreational or adult use. Yeah. Whereas this, the trend is in the next 5 to 10 years that every state is. So why are we continuing to fight? And here's the sad part. Back in 2014, actually even before 2012, DC said that cannabis should be adult use. So here we are 13 years later, still having this argument and this conversation, but we don't have the policymakers living up to this. We did a poll with I-71, and I'll talk about I-71 after this.
Yeah,
we did a poll in 2022 with the I-71. Cornell, can't think of his last name right now, a poster. 70% of the poll said that they wanted DC to be adult use.
Yeah.
7 out of 10 people.
Oh, yeah.
We presented this information. That's how we landed to get 13 amendments passed so that we can get a pathway, because before they didn't even want us to have a license from legacy to a license. So we got 13 amendments passed. And, you know, kudos to us for doing that. The I-71 committee is no longer there. There's going to be a new committee formed out of the medical committee, dispensaries, which I'm pretty sure in the next 60 to 90 days, we'll get some headway there. But as the formal chairman of the space, I fought every day so that we could get the opportunity to not only be adult use, but number two is that we could take this stitch and stigma that we can, the social equity, the DEI, the things that Maryland is doing great. Do you know, George, that Maryland gives up to $5 million to cultivators and grants to start a business? Of the $500,000 to retailers? Come on. If you're a person of color, which the biggest thing in this space is capital.
Yeah.
Starting a business, that's any business, whether you black, brown, green, yellow, it doesn't matter. But if you have the opportunity to get funding to help you start a business and a state is buying into that, that's leadership. That's commitment. Yeah. That's what we're not getting. And unfortunately, that's where we are right now. You know, you can tell us we can get a license all day, but if you're not going to support us to make the industry safer, you can say, yeah, you want it safer, but how's it going to be afforded? Who's able? Do you know right now it takes, my burn rate is about $170,000 a month before just breaking even as a business.
Wow. Yeah, it's, you know, I thought maybe 18 months from now, we would have had a bit of a difference in where we are right now. But it's like, I don't get it, man. This is like, it just has not gotten any better. It feels like, I don't know where we are, but I'm glad you got to the medical level and others, you know, are going to find their way into that medical cannabis market. At least there's still that. It's not like it's completely gone and away. But again, it's the trouble of getting people that are going to want to go ahead and adopt to that or decide to go to Maryland because they want to see adult use however they want. And trust me, we talk about this on our Planting Seeds program. You know, Pennsylvania is just to the north of you, 4 hours away. And we look at what all these changes are in all these different states up in the Northeast and just saying to ourselves, well, we're not getting any help from legalization from the federal government. And it doesn't matter who's been there. It's been lockstep either side of the aisle. We just haven't gotten there yet. I'm still going to be of the opinion that I'm going to try to stay positive about the fact that if Congress could just start moving the system forward and all this gridlock we've been having for so long, if it just goes one direction or the other, at least there's been bipartisan bills out there. Maybe we get to that point of finally seeing if cannabis can be put up in front. But we were waiting for that. Nothing's happened. The DEA, we still have this administrative law judge. Can we get them to go and move along and do something? If the DEA law judge were able to get things started up again and rescheduling were to happen, would that make any significant change to DC since it's not under that state distinction? Would that make any difference? And was that what you were planning on?
Yeah, that's what something we were rescheduling because, you know, biggest thing is rescheduling would probably make cannabis adult use in D.C.
Right.
If you look at it. And then, you know, the whole 280E thing, you know, how do we, you know, that's another, you know, a conversation that we can speak hours on. And so we were hoping the last State of the Union's speech that President Biden did, he talked about cannabis. You know, that same night, I did a salon dinner with 40 people that, you know, was a policy salon dinner on cannabis. Me and a guy by the name of Steve Clemens. And we pretty much, you know, got a round of applause because applause that we wanted. We heard that President Biden was going to talk about cannabis in his State of the Union speech. Now, here we are going into another State of the Union speech, and we don't what's going on? Nothing's changed. You know, we talked about that administrative judge who has this thing on pause right now, and we talk about, you know, how effective that decision can help DC overcome some challenges. I think that, you know, again, when you have a passive administrator and you have a passive council, I've met with, you know, the chairman of the council, several of the council members. They're all in agreement that they want DC to be a better cannabis market, but I think they're scared. You know, I talked about home rule of the Trump administration, anything that they say that might draw attention from a policy or legislation standpoint, I think that they're remiss about moving forward. And unfortunately, it's sad because we pay taxes every day as business people, but we don't have any representation there because of what the fearfulness of this current administration has brought. And I don't know when that might change, but, you know, as again, I have to team with other people to fight this fight.
Now, the one thing we were talking about before when it comes to the DEA, that, as far as I know, I haven't seen anything where that DEA administrator, the new nominee, has been confirmed yet. And maybe that's something we have to wait for that will let us know if that administrative law judge is going to be able to case. But the other question is,
let me stop you for a second.
Sure.
So the person who's running the Department of Justice is your formal Pam Bondi.
Right.
He was the attorney general
here. Yes.
Yes. She is not for cannabis. She's made it loud and clear.
Right. But what I'm saying is, aside from where we are right now with it, that DEA administrator has not been confirmed yet.
Right.
And we don't know what that DEA law judge, if that is a part of the hold that we have right now in the first place. But in that meantime, I'll ask this last question. Is there any chance where you or someone else from DC can come together and try to get themselves involved in the hearing with that administrative law judge and get into the proceedings and be involved in it? Is there any chance to be a part of that at all?
I haven't seen any chance of that as of yet. You know, I've been asking. I'm working with a lobbyist now
to see if, you know, if that's a possibility. But again, you got to throw thousands and tens of thousands of dollars in that space. And unfortunately, I'm not in the position to throw tens of thousands of dollars and also fight the local. So I got to pick my battle.
Right.
And so, you know, I have to lean on those who are actually fighting this battle, and support them, you know, from the sideline, and which I will do. I am, you know, I'm prayerful, that one day, that this change will come, you know, and I'm hoping that, you know, we'll see what this 18 months, we'll see what happens in the next 18 months if there are some changes, because I think there's going to need to be a some change in regimes in terms of if they can keep the House and pick up the Senate. And, you know, I'm an independent, you know, I'm a not affiliated, but I'm also a person of principles.
I'm just, like I said, but right now I'm just waiting to see where things are going to fall in. This sucks because it still comes down to the fact that DC has to be held to a different distinction. We talked about this before. It sucks, but we're going to leave it for another day. I'm out of time with all this, but let's go and go to the website real quick. One more time, monko.co, monko.co. For those visiting the DC area, tell people where they go and find out more about getting their hands on the great products and to come visit you guys.
So Monko is in the heart of Mount Vernon Triangle, 444 K Street Northwest. You can, you know, as he said, monko.co. You can also reach us at on the gram at MonkoDC. If you need to talk to me directly, I'm D. Terrence White on Instagram. I'm also on LinkedIn, Terrence White, Monko. Be glad to talk to you about anything. George, it's always a great talking to you, man. We could talk for hours, and I appreciate you having your ears to the ground and still, although you're in Florida, still understanding what's going on up here in D.C. and in the Northwest, Mid-Atlantic and Northwest. And it's always a pleasure, and keep doing and helping this cause, because we need more people like you that have listeners and have that reach to educate people and bring these issues to the forefront.
Terrence, we're going to come back and do this again. And look at that. 18 months later, Florida and D.C. are in the same spot. No adult use. Go figure. Yeah. We had potential. We had promise, but did not happen.
And that's sad.
I know. Thank you, Terrence. Thank you, listeners. We'll get to talk to you next time. The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests, hosts, and participants, and not necessarily those of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast or retransmission without proper consent is prohibited.
Lowe's knows how to set off your July 4th with savings. Right now, buy one, get one free on select one coat coverage interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Plus, get two select 2 or 2.5 quart red, white, and blue annuals for just $10. Hurry, these July 4th deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, excludes Alaska and Hawaii. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for more details. Lowe's knows how to help you save. This July 4th, get up to 40% off select Whirlpool kitchen appliances. Plus, get an additional 10% off when you buy two or three select major appliances. And when you buy four or more, you'll save an additional 20%. Find the right appliances and features that fit your kitchen's unique needs and style. Shop Whirlpool 4th of July deals at Lowe's. Valid through 7/9. See Lowe's.com for details. Savings vary based on purchase amount. Selection varies by location.